Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 398, titled More on the Virtual State and the Manipulation of Political Polarities. This is being recorded on February 9th of the year 2002. Now, the title of the broadcast is The Virtual State and the Manipulation of Political Polarities. The title refers to a concept that was presented by Philip Bobbitt, a professor at the University of Texas, who has also served as an advisor to a number of different presidents on national security matters. And in his recent 919-page opus, The Shield of Achilles, he discussed Al-Qaeda as a virtual state, a state without formal geographical borders in the way that we conceive of them. My concept of the underground Reich, which is not at all dissociated from Al-Qaeda, as we've seen, my concept of the underground Reich is precisely just such a virtual state. And what we're going to be looking at in this program is how the virtual state exists on opposite sides of different ethnic and ideological divides and is working basically to promote the most destructive type of relationship between these polarities, which will ultimately either destroy or fatally weaken themselves, leaving the virtual state of the underground Reich in a position to take over. To make a very, very, very long story very, very, very short, what we're seeing in the United States now is neither a Reichstag fire per se, nor a Pearl Harbor per se, but rather a combination of the two. In For the Record 344 through 346, I termed that series, that section of the For the Record series, Pearl Harbor Meets the Reichstag Fire. To make a long story short, if Hitler had been in the White House when Pearl Harbor was attacked, this is what you would be seeing. To use another contraction, one of the central focal points of the inquiry in For the Record on September 11th and related matters such as the Iraqi imbroglio is that the people running the country, not George Bush per se, who is essentially motivated, in my opinion, by greed to a certain extent, egomania to a certain extent. He basically is a puppet. In Iraq, he's basically after the oil, and they're manipulating events in such a way as to distract from the fact that George Bush essentially has no domestic agenda. We're going to talk about what Bush is going to be doing, what he proposes to do on the domestic agenda later in the program. But in order to understand the hypothesis that I'm presenting here, this isn't, quote, U.S. imperialism, unquote, et cetera, et cetera. Not that that isn't the motivation of some of the parties involved, but the United States has had tremendous damage done to it by the Bush administration, economically, politically, diplomatically, and environmentally. In order to understand what I'm presenting here, imagine that not Bush per se, but the forces that control him are not out to impose the U.S. will on the rest of the world. The engineer intends to wreck the train, and what you're seeing is an attempt by the engineer to wreck the train. And if we're going to keep the train on track or get it back on track, it's going to take a coalition of Americans and other people around the world on different sides of ideological and ethnic divides, but people who take the idea of the United States of America seriously, people who take the idea of civilization seriously, because the underground Reich, literally a Third Reich gone underground and perpetuated in mafia-like fashion, is in control in the United States. They're in control in a lot of other places, and the world is going to experience the fate of being governed by Hitler's minions with all the ferocity that they can muster. As Churchill basically expressed it when talking about what would happen if the Nazis won World War II, the world will be plunged into an abyss made more sinister by the knights of perverted science. Now, talking about ideological divides in September 11th, first we're going to, once again, very briefly revisit the Saudi connections to September 11th. And even as Bush, Rumsfeld, and others are rattling the sabers ever more vigorously in the direction of Iraq, the Iraqi Ba'ath Party itself and Saddam Hussein have connections to the underground Reich and a political motivation that stems to the Third Reich in its above-ground phase, as we've seen in many broadcasts. But Saudi Arabia can be verified absolutely as having been complicit in the attacks of September 11th. Large elements of the Saudi elite were involved, and yet we're not rattling the war sabers in the direction of Iraq. As we looked at in For the Record 395, Saudi Arabia financed the Iraqi nuclear effort to the tune of $5 billion, and the software that Iraq got in order to mass, the software for the mass production of nuclear bombs, came from Degussa, the former IG Farben subsidiary that was at the core of the Third Reich's attempts to make an A-bomb, and there were direct links there to the Third Reich and its underground manifestation. And again, we looked at those in 395. But the former Nazi A-bomb derivatives that went to benefit the Iraqi nuclear program were financed by Saudi Arabia, as was much of September 11th. But what have we done? Basically, George Bush has simply fastened his lips ever more resolutely to the hairy backside of King Abdullah, and we are all very much the worse. San Jose Mercury, Wednesday, February 5th, 2003, has the following article from Mercury News Wire Services Stories. This is the In Brief section, Washington, D.C. Saudis help terror suspect's wife leave the United States. The Saudi embassy quietly provided the wife of a terror suspect a passport and transportation out of the United States in November, after she was subpoenaed to testify before a federal grand jury in New York investigating her husband's possible links to the Al-Qaeda terrorist network, diplomatic and law enforcement sources said. Skipping down. Maha Hafiz Al-Mahri and her five young children flew to Saudi Arabia on November 10th, just 3 days after federal prosecutors had their last contact with a lawyer representing her. The FBI had confiscated passports for Mahri and her children soon after her husband was arrested in Peoria, Illinois, in late 2001. So another 2 points through the hoop for the Saudis, and this is the type of thing that doesn't seem to be evidencing or generating a lot of outrage in the Bush administration. George W. Bush, among others, has the most profound connections to the Saudi elite. And as we're going to look at in the background of the article I'm about to deal with, in turn, the Wahhabi elements within Saudi Arabia not only have links to George Bush, but through organizations like the Muslim Brotherhood and the Al-Taqwa Bank that was formed by the Muslim Brotherhood, one actually finds links, manifestations of the virtual state that is the underground Reich and one of its derivatives, Al-Qaeda, present in both the Republican Party and in the business connections of George Bush and in Al-Qaeda, links going to the Third Reich, and one finds associates of this virtual state on sides that are very much opposed. And what we're going to look at next is an article from the Wall Street Journal that links the milieu of the Operation Green Quest raids from March 20th of 2002 to a militant African-American Muslim prison milieu that is very much opposed to the United States and that has links to Saudi Arabia. And there are a number of things to keep in mind here. Keep in mind Saeed Ramadan, an associate of Francois Janou, head of the Muslim Brotherhood, who was successfully recruiting from among African-Americans in the mid-1970s, indicating that he had an infrastructure in the wall in the Washington, D.C. area that was sufficient to support that kind of activity. Bear in mind, too, the curious case of the sniper, the Washington sniper, who was operating in the Virginia, Maryland Beltway area around Washington, D.C., and in Bellingham, Washington. As we're going to review, those are all areas that had the presence of the milieu of the Operation Green Quest raids. So as you listen to what you're about to listen to, bear in mind that the Al-Taqwa / Muslim Brotherhood milieu and the Saudis are very much present within the political milieu of George Bush. And there are links going back to the Third Reich. But we're also going to see this virtual state of the underground Reich and Al-Qaeda / Muslim Brotherhood sympathizers within an element that one would suppose would be diametrically opposed to people like George Bush. Herein lies the deadly and elusive nature of the virtual state of the underground Reich. It's underground, and one finds it within political polarities that are opposing one another, and it appears that they are exacerbating that polarity. Wall Street Journal of Wednesday, February 5th of 2003, had a very important article on the front page. This is by Paul M. Barrett. It's titled, Captive Audience, How a Chaplain Spread Extremism to an Inmate Flock. And it is subtitled, Radical New York Imam Chose Clerics for State Prisons, Prays for 9/11 Martyrs, unquote, and Saudi Arabia's Helping Hand. It reads in part as follows. Over a quiet dinner at an Indian restaurant in upstate New York, Warit Din Umar offered his views of Islam and the September 11th attacks. The hijackers should be honored as martyrs, he said. The U.S. risks further terrorism attacks because it oppresses Muslims around the world. Without justice, there will be warfare, and it can come to this country too, he said. The natural candidates to help press such an attack, in his view, African Americans who embraced Islam in prison. Skipping down, we read, Imam Umar, born Wallace Jean Marks and later known as Wallace 10X, twice has traveled to Saudi Arabia for worship and study at the expense of the Saudi government and its affiliated charities, part of an extensive program aimed at spreading Islam in U.S. prisons. He and other prison chaplains also have studied and attended conferences at an Islamic school in Virginia that U.S. officials raided last year in a probe of organizations suspected of helping to move Saudi money to Middle Eastern terrorists. Although New York State officials knew that a few chaplains were making pilgrimages to Saudi Arabia, the state's prison commissioner said last week that he did not know a large group had traveled at the Saudi government's expense. And skipping down of Imam Umar's political genesis alongside of Louis Farrakhan, himself an individual who has some very interesting connections to white supremacist groups and has played a very, very interesting role in the investigation of the assassination of the man whose mantle he has assumed, Malcolm X. There are very, very serious questions about Farrakhan and the death of Malcolm X. Farrakhan actually called for Malcolm X's assassination. I would note, too, that the accused Washington, D.C. sniper, John Muhammad, was also at one point a bodyguard for Louis Farrakhan. Skipping down of Imam Umar. Before beginning his two-year prison term, he visited Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan, who promised that Allah would protect him. Mr. Marks became a Nation of Islam leader in prison and later changed his name to Wallace 10X. In 1975, shortly after he was released, New York put the 30-year-old parolee on its payroll as one of the state's first two Muslim chaplains. Some of the other early Muslim chaplains also were ex-convicts. Eventually, he moved to the more orthodox Sunni school of Islam and changed his name to Warith Din Umar. Warith Din means inheritor of the religion. Umar was an early Muslim leader. To give you an idea of the potential impact of a person like this, there are now 200 to 340,000 Muslim inmates nationwide, making up 10 to 17% of the prison and jail population, according to estimates by correction officials and Muslim organizations. By the way, I would note that New York and California are primary areas where large numbers of African American Muslims are incarcerated. And skipping down, of the role of the Saudi government in deliberately promoting Dawah, or the spreading of Islam, within the U.S. prison system and among African Americans in particular, we read, Prison Dawah, or the spreading of the faith, has become a priority for many Muslim groups in the U.S. and the Saudi government, which runs what spokesman Nail al-Jubir calls a prison outreach, unquote, program. The Islamic Affairs Department of its Washington embassy ships out hundreds of copies of the Quran each month, as well as religious pamphlets and videos to prison chaplains and Islamic groups who then pass them along to inmates. The Saudi government also pays for prison chaplains, along with many other American Muslims, to travel to Saudi Arabia for worship and study during the Hajj, the traditional winter pilgrimage to Mecca that all Muslims are supposed to make at least once in their lives. The trips typically cost $3,000 a person and last several weeks, said Mr. Al-Jubair, the Saudi spokesman. Since 1978, Imam Umar has made the pilgrimage to Mecca four times. In 1998 and 2000, he was a member of groups whose travel was financed by the Saudi government and affiliated organizations. On the 2000 trip, Imam Umar was among 17 prison chaplains and their wives from the U.S. And in the next section, we're going to be taking a look at the organization that was alluded to earlier in the article, the GSISS, the Graduate School of Islamic and Social Studies in Leesburg, Virginia. This organization was targeted in the March 20th Green Quest raids, and note that it overlaps a milieu that was run by Yaqub Mirza, and Yaqub Mirza's base was Bellingham, Washington. Oddly enough, the sniper, the accused Washington, D.C. sniper, John Alad Muhammad, was conducting his operations in a very strange geographical, within very strange geographical parameters. He was operating primarily in the Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland Beltway, and in Bellingham, Washington. And indeed, the supervisor of a homeless shelter in Bellingham noted it was very unusual for this guy to be staying there. He appeared to have no money, and yet he was traveling all over the place with no apparent means of support. What I would ask is perhaps that means of support came from the Saudis / Yaqub Mirza. And as you listen to this article, bear in mind that one of Yaqub Mirza's main business interests was Amana Mutual Funds Incorporated. On the board of directors of that is Jamal Barzinji, an associate of Youssef Nada, former German spy and the head of Al-Taqwa, German spy during World War II, that is. And also Talat Atman was a director of the Amana Mutual Funds. Talat Atman was also a director of and close personal associate of George W. Bush. And it was Talat Atman who interceded with Paul O'Neill, now the ex-Treasury Secretary, on behalf of the targets of the March 20th Green Quest raids. So as you contemplate the virtual state, bear in mind that what we're looking at here is the virtual state of the underground Reich that is uniting the seemingly diametrically opposed interests, militant African-American Muslims, and also George Bush and Al-Qaeda. And the roots of Al-Taqwa go back to the Third Reich and the Muslim Brotherhood. Back to the Wall Street Journal article of 2005-2003. Tahaj Jabir al-Alwani, the president of the Graduate School of Islamic and Social Studies in Leesburg, Virginia, helped arrange the trip in 2000 for the prison chaplain contingent. He made contacts on their behalf with Saudi government offices and government-funded charities, he said. Mr. Al-Walani had gotten to know Imam Umar and other New York State prison chaplains in the 1990s when they studied at his school and attended conferences there. The school awarded Imam Umar a master's degree in 2001. The U.S. government uses the school to help select chaplains for its prisons and for the military. Last March, a federal task force led by Customs Service agents raided the graduate school and Mr. Al-Walani's Virginia home, trucking away documents and computer files. The search was part of a broad investigation of Islamic organizations and charities in Virginia suspected by federal agents of helping to move Saudi money to foreign terrorist groups, including Al-Qaeda and Hamas. Many American Muslim leaders have condemned the Customs Service task force known as Operation Green Quest, saying its mission reflects anti-Islam prejudice. Mr. Al-Walani strongly denies any association with terrorism, and the government hasn't brought any charges against him or his school or any of the other Virginia-based organizations. I would add, bear in mind that Talat Atman, director of Harkin Energy, member of the audit committee of Harkin Energy that okayed the funky Aloha Petroleum deal for George W. Bush, Talat Atman gave a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention and is a strong associate of the Bushes. He interceded on behalf of these organizations, and that may have something to do with the relative lack of judicial discipline that they've been subjected to. But some of the individuals have been indicted. Continuing with this passage, other investigations by Operation Green Quest have resulted in 70 indictments, mostly on charges related to money laundering, currency smuggling, and fraud, a Customs Service spokesman says. He denies the service is motivated by any bias against Muslims. In its statement, the Bureau of Prisons declined to comment on the investigation but added, quote, "We would certainly take appropriate action with respect to any school or organization that has ties to terrorist groups," unquote. A Pentagon spokeswoman says the Department of Defense is aware of the investigation and confirms that the military uses the school as an, quote, "ecclesiastical certifying organization," unquote. Skipping down again, Shiite prisoners, this refers to apparent dissemination by some of the Sunni Muslims, the Wahhabi prison chaplains, of a pamphlet that basically pins Shia Islam on, you guessed it, a Jewish conspiracy in the 7th century. Shiite prisoners at Fishkill Prison have accused Imam Muhammad of calling them, quote, "infiltrators and snitches," unquote, during Friday sermons. They say Sunni inmates have circulated a pamphlet, quote, "The difference between the Shiites and the majority of Muslim scholars, which recounts an ancient smear that Shiaism grew out of a 7th century conspiracy organized by a Yemeni Jew who sought, quote, to create discord among Muslims by agitating the tribal and racial differences and hostilities," unquote. The 32-page booklet was published by the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, an organization based in Riyadh and backed by the Saudi government. Two former heads of the World Association of Muslim Youth, by the way, are Abdullah bin Laden, Osama's younger brother, and also Jamal Barzinji. It's an organization that was being investigated by the FBI in connection with Al-Qaeda. And Jamal Barzinji, who was the former head of the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, was also a close associate of Youssef Nada, former Axis spy and key Muslim Brotherhood operative, and another member. He also sat on the board of Amana Mutual Funds Incorporated. Again, another member of that board of directors, Talat Atman, close associate of George W. Bush. So again here, the virtual state and its manifestation on many different sides of many different ethnic and political elements, many of them on opposite sides of bitter struggles. We're going to take a look now, just as we've looked in the past, at the roots of the Bush administration and the underground Reich, and the roots of the Ba'ath Party and Saddam Hussein's government in the underground Reich, and the Third Reich in its above-ground phase. So, too, now, we're going to look at a very disturbing link between Islamo-fascists, extreme Stalinists, and some highly suspect individuals, and the anti-war movement in the United States. The focal point of the discussion that's to follow is international answer. That, in turn, is an offshoot of the International Action Center. It has sort of a twin focal point. It's associated with Ramsey Clark, or as I call him, Ramsey Youssef Clark, the attorney for Sheikh Rahman, one of the principal figures in the World Trade Center bombing in 1993. Ramsey Clark's a very interesting fellow. We spoke about him in For the Record 350. This milieu, in addition to Stalinists and Ramsey Clark, also incorporates some Islamo-fascist elements with connections to Ahmed Huber and Al-Taqwa, just like the milieu that we were looking at in connection with the prison chaplains. Bear in mind, again, that Saeed Ramadan, a very important figure and head of the Muslim Brotherhood associate of Francois Janoux, was successfully recruiting from among Muslim African-American Muslims in the Washington, D.C. area in the 1970s. Bear in mind also the unresolved questions about John Alad Muhammad, the accused D.C. sniper. His areas of operation also overlap what we looked at here, and again, he converted to his Islam when he was in the U.S. Army, and African-American Muslims were actively being recruited in the mid-80s in that time period to fight against the Soviets in Afghanistan. And we know that it was the anti-Soviet Afghan effort that saw the genesis of many of the combatant elements of Al-Taqwa. We're going to take a look now at Ahmed Huber and one of his associates, Abdul Alim Musa. This is from the very important article by Kevin Coogan, the author of the essential Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey in the Post-War Fascist International. This article was first published in Hit List magazine in April and May of 2002. This article is by Kevin Coogan, titled "The Mysterious Ahmed Huber," and this is available on the internet. I will have the URL available in the description of For the Record 398. Talking about Ahmed Huber, a director of Al-Taqwa, associate of Omar Amin von Leers, nay, Johann von Leers. And we're going to take a look at a link here between Huber and somebody who was apparently very active in the International Answer demonstrations in Washington, D.C. in January of 2003. Skipping down in Kevin's articles, Huber has presented talks to pro-Khomeini groups like the Persian Speaking Group of the Muslim Students Association, or MSA. At the 27th MSA convention held in Chicago in December of 1997, for example, Huber spoke on Islam at two panels with Imam Abdul Alim Musa and Sheikh Muhammad Al-Asi, both of whom are associated with the Pro-Khomeini Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, or ICIT. Huber also appeared with both men a year earlier at another pro-Khomeini conference organized by the Muslim Parliament, which was held in London in November of 1996, and which advertised participation by representatives from both Hezbollah and Hamas. And to give you an idea of the political context in which this speaker at the International Answer, quote, peace, unquote, demonstration exists, to flesh out briefly Huber's associations. Even as Huber plays a major role in Islamist networks, he remains highly active inside Europe's far-right elite. Along with a poster of Imam Khomeini and a framed quote from Hitler denouncing modern art, Huber's house contains a photo of his friend Jörg Haider, Austria's leading electoral rightist, and who, by the way, parlays anti-Muslim sentiment into political coinage for his movement in Austria. Continuing. But Huber's most eye-opening picture displays both himself and Nazi financier François Genoux at a meeting in Spain with Léon Daguerre, a Waffen-SS general whom Hitler once said he wanted to adopt as a son. Daguerre, who lived in Spain in order to escape war crimes charges in his native Belgium, was a top leader of the post-war ultra-right. Inside Switzerland, Huber helps direct the Avalon Gemeinschaft, an elite far-right group whose members include former Waffen-SS volunteers. Each year, Avalon's cadre retire to the woods during the summer solstice and conduct ritual celebrations of Europe's pagan past. That's who Ahmed Huber is. We've talked about him at great length in many broadcasts. And by way of setting the context for the first part of the second half of the show, research credit on the following article goes to Kevin Coogan. The following is from the Washington Post of January 23rd of 2003. This is an op-ed piece by Michael Kelly. It's called Marching with Stalinists. On War with Iraq, the left has chosen the anti-American side. And this talks about some of the far-left and Stalinist connections of the International Action Center, and the International Answer is its associated organization. But in addition to the Stalinist connections of this organization, and we'll talk about those in the second half of the program, it also has some very interesting fascist tangents as well. And noting Imam Musa, associate of Ahmed Huber, he was apparently a top speaker in the International Answer Washington, D.C. rally in January of 2003. Michael Kelly writes of International Answer and the demonstration, "It marches with and stands with and cheers on people like the speaker at the Washington rally, Imam Musa of the mosque Majid al-Islam, who declares, quote, the real terrorists have always been the United Snakes of America, unquote, and then led the crowd in the Islamic bombers' chant, Allahu Akbar, unquote. And that is, again, an associate of Ahmed Huber. I would note that this kind of activity also plays right into the hands of those who would perhaps like to intern African Americans as subversives, and also those who would portray people who have sincere doubts about war in Iraq as basically Al-Qaeda apologists or even fellow travelers. And certainly the same, that could be accurately said of Mr. Musa, and people should take close note. Before we wrap up this side, WFMU is archiving the shows on Real Audio. WFMU.org/Dave Emery has more recent programs streaming on Real Audio, older programs for download only at a linked URL. Spitfire distributes the tapes and CDs of this program, as well as all of the other material that I've recorded over the years. SpitfireList.com is their website. It's equipped with Real Audio, and in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website, there are detailed annotated article-length descriptions of each For the Record program going back to 233, and there will be a description of this program up within a week or so of the recording of the program. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 398, more on the virtual state and the manipulation of political polarities. This has been recorded on February 9th of 2003. I'm Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.